Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And I'm here this week with my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hey, Mark. Hello, fellow Voltron fans. You know, I had 99 bottles of beer stuck in my head, and that's because this is episode 99, right?
Yes, it is. We're getting really close to number 100, and we have a lot of things planned for you guys. We're going to be announcing them a little bit by a little bit on our social media sites, so pay attention to our Facebook and our Twitter accounts. That's at Let's Voltron on Twitter and Let's Voltron Podcast on Facebook.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. And this episode is certainly no slouch. You know, 100 is a big deal, but 99 is a big deal because we have a very special fellow fan guest, don't we?
Yes, and she's going to help us review our next episode, which is episode 5, Eye of the Storm.
Yes, episode 5, season 2, Voltron Legendary Defender.
Yes, the most awesome show on Netflix right now.
That's right.
Okay, so let's bring her on. I want to introduce to everyone somebody that we met at New York Comic Con at the party that we saw in Brooklyn.
Yes, this is Irene. Irene, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Welcome, Irene.
Hi, guys. I am really excited to be here and also delightfully terrified.
That's okay. You can relax.
Yeah, we're always terrified, too. We just fake it. Fake it till you make it.
Fabulous faking.
It's all right. You can't smell Greg over Skype.
That's what you think.
He smelled pretty good at the party. He was good. He was good to go.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And wasn't that a great party?
Oh, my gosh.
That was unbelievable.
Just to recap, it was called the Voltron Collective. There were a bunch of, there were some artistic displays. There was some new and upcoming Voltron Legendary Defender merchandise and a lot of really awesome fans there too, including Irene.
So that night, I was actually really inspired by it, not only because I love Voltron and I've loved Voltron for a long time, but also because I was actually in the midst of working on designing for an event. So when I walked in there, it was like a light bulb went off in the best way possible. I was like, if I could add some icing on the cake, it would be an amazing party that is specifically for Voltron. So, you know, it was just so good.
Well, that's cool. So what kind of an event was it then?
So I used to work for a company called fab.com.
Okay.
They're this really cool e-commerce website that features well-designed and unusual products. And we were doing a collaboration with this show called Broad City. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it.
No.
It's on Comedy Central. It's basically two young girls in their 20s having crazy adventures in New York City. And it's quite funny. And they have amazing opening sequences done by this incredible illustrator called Mike Perry.
Oh.
And at Fab, we got to do the first official collaboration to create a product line for them.
How cool.
And this was hush hush. We were working on it since April and we couldn't say anything. And we had to plan this whole event to launch it in November. So literally when I went to that party, I was in the midst of, you know, designing all the graphics that would go on the walls and all the branding and what the space would look like, how the products would be showcased. So really the Voltron experience was absolutely perfect to, you know, get myself inspired and into gear for that.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So you're not working there anymore, though, right?
No. So I'm a freelancer, and I kind of just, you know, go with the flow. I'm a freelance designer and art director, and I left Fab, I want to say, like, mid-November, and now I work for the city.
Oh,
that's great.
Yeah. You guys already know, but I live in New York City, and I've been here for almost 11 years,
mm-hmm.
and I absolutely love it. And it's just kind of like a dream to be able to be doing any sort of marketing, design, and content to promote the city that I love so much.
That is so amazing.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
The city that never sleeps.
It really doesn't. and it should sleep, let me tell you. We all need a break.
When you do need a break, what do you do?
Well, if I'm going to get out of New York, if that's the break, sometimes I'll hop on a bus and I go visit a friend in like Boston or upstate or whatnot. Hopefully I can hop on a plane and go home to Puerto Rico to chill with the family. But that's a little bit more expensive, so can't do that often.
Gotcha.
But if not, I'm also a retired dancer. I grew up dancing pre-professionally. So if I want to unwind, then I'll be at the dance studio.
Wow.
Which is great.
That is cool. Yeah.
You're a jack of all trades, huh?
Nah, I'm good. I know a few things, but you guys do it all. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, we do it all. We sit behind a mic and we talk about Voltron.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you need to do, really.
If only.
But the coolest part is meeting cool Voltron fans like you.
Yeah.
You guys are the best.
Gosh, New York Comic Con was a first for me, a first convention of that size. My first time where I wasn't, first time as an adult where I was there in the city, not on business, which was cool. My first time where I could, you know, kind of come out of my shell, put on the podcast co-host hat, and just have fun. Come on, Irene. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Everybody always thinks my name is on that song.
Ugh.
Come on, Eileen.
Well, I was kidding about it, but, you know.
Well, no, it's a really good mistake. I love that song. Happy one.
Yeah, and it was just a lame pun. I'm full of them, as I'm sure you've heard over time.
I love puns. Keep going.
All right. So tell us, you said you've liked Voltron for a long time. What? How did you get into the whole thing?
Well, I think you and I talked about this, but...
Not everyone has listened to that episode.
So. Yeah, and you also have to understand that during that time, there was all kinds of loud music playing in the background, all right? So it was kind of hard to hear.
That is very true.
So now here it is. There's no distractions, there's no music, there's no nothing. Just now we can really hear, you know, what you have to say.
That's right.
All right. So as a kid, I would watch Cartoon Network a lot. And I want to say around middle school, Toonami started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how I just got hooked. I remember like watching the commercials for Toonami, and they would have the sequence when the boys are escaping from Planet Doom and they're like kicking all like the drool butts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, I want to see that action. And that's kind of how I got into it. I would ditch the beach to watch the show, which is a really big deal when you grow up in the tropics and have one of the most gorgeous beaches 10 minutes away.
Wow.
That is amazing.
It's been love ever since. I never got into vehicle, and I watched the 3D series a little bit here and there. But then I got super hooked on Voltron Force as well, which I absolutely loved. And I'm sad it ended so early. But yeah, it's been an awesome ride. And I can't believe that this show has brought it back in such an amazing and incredible way. You know, every day I'm like, holy moly, this is happening. This is real.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
You've been through two seasons of Voltron Legendary Defender now. And what's been your favorite part about this series and this version of Voltron?
I love the character development. I love that we're not watching, you know, just hollow guys getting into the lions and kicking butt. You know, these are people that I can relate with. I mean, they're not really people, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They all got their stories and I can relate to each and every one of them in a special way, which... That wasn't the case with the original series. Voltron Force had a little bit of that too, but I think here that is way more powerful and it's by far my favorite thing.
Yeah, you can really feel the emotion in these characters, can't you?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, when I found out that the team that was going to be doing this was the same from Avatar and Korra, I was expecting that, which I am extremely satisfied by it. So, you know, it's great.
Yeah, it's fun every time you watch it. I've never watched an episode and thought, I've seen this enough. You know, I'll just turn this off. No, I turn it on and I'm always hooked, you know?
For sure. It just gives you more and more and more.
It does.
Yep. So we're now at a point where we've seen a couple of battles with Zarkon, and the second one, and we're not giving anything away here. We're not spoiling anything because everybody's seen it already. But the second battle with Zarkon obviously hurt him, and now we're going to be seeing Lotor. So what do you think about, you know, Lotor coming into the picture?
I almost had a heart attack when they mentioned his name. I mean, he's it. He's the one villain that has been around throughout all the different shows.
Right.
So it's about time.
Yeah, I would agree.
He had to make a big entrance.
Oh, for sure. And I can't wait. Yeah, I'm like waiting for the amazing choreography entrance.
I'm very interested in how the whole dynamic is going to change, not just between the heroes and the villains, but among the villains. Because to me, in the original Voltron, one of my favorite things was the banter between Lotor and Hagar. And it'll be really interesting to see how things unfold in this new series.
Oh, for sure. And even more so, we haven't seen so much from Hagar either. So I'm hoping that through Lotor coming into the picture, we'll be able to unveil a little bit of more of that, you know? I mean, also by finding out that she's Altaian at the end of that fabulous finale, that also, you know, tells us that they're going to be unveiling more about from her. But I'm really excited to see how that's going to play.
Yeah.
And that's something, Irene, that a lot of people haven't talked about, is the fact that Hagar is going to probably become a little bit more prominent as a result of Lotor coming into the picture. And I think that's great that you're bringing that up, because we've all been looking forward to seeing more about Hagar, too, since we learned that she's Altaian.
Oh, for sure. And even so, now that I know that piece of, well, we all know that little piece of information, when I was watching the episode for today's review, there was one moment, I'm sure we're going to probably talk about it, but she, you know, brings up wanting to eliminate the princess, and then that wheel started turning, and I'm like, I wonder what has transpired between Hagar and Allura's family and so forth that could cause this particular reaction here.
That is a very interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yep. And we could talk about that as we go through this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So are we going to see you at New York Comic Con again next year?
Oh, hell yeah.
You wouldn't miss it after a party like that, huh?
Oh, hell no. I actually, I'm not technically a cosplayer, I guess, but I love dressing up. And In New York, we have incredible parades. I mean, the Halloween parade, and then we have this amazing summer celebration in Coney Island called the Mermaid Parade that people go dressed up as mermaids and sea creatures.
Oh, wow.
As in the depths.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, I'm inspired by this episode for this year's parade. I've never cosplayed, and I think this year at Comic-Con will be the moment to do it.
Wow.
I'm still trying to figure out what character I would love to do Allura, but unfortunately, my complexion is the negative version of Allura. So I don't know how that's going to go, but we'll see. So if you see me there, you'll see me in costume.
Awesome.
There's been people who look nothing like, you know, Keith or Hunk or Lance or all those other ones, and still they're dressing up as them. So I don't think it really matters. It's whoever you want to be.
That's very true.
That's true. So if you want to be, you know, Zarkon, you could, although I'd recommend not, you know.
That would be a lot of purple paint.
Oh, golly, yeah.
I would make a very adorable Zarkon.
All right. And then the merchandise, obviously, when we were at the New York Comic Con party, there was the Voltron Collective. And obviously, there were a lot of manufacturers of goods for Voltron there. Have you gotten any of this merchandise over the last several months?
I've gotten the 5 like basic lions. And those guys are beautifully displayed in my little studio.
Cool.
Hanging out with my Funko and with the really cute flyer that you guys gave me with your logo, which, by the way, I love.
Oh, cool.
So they're all hanging out. I have refrained myself from buying more toys because I live in New York City, so that means I have a small apartment. And I have to control myself.
And you're on a budget.
That too.
Yeah.
My wallet doesn't allow it.
There's some nice New Era hats out now.
That is true.
They're available on the website. We may be seeing a discount coming soon on the Voltron store. You have to pay attention, though.
Oh. All right, I will.
Yeah. You've heard it here, folks.
You know what I do want to get my hands on? Those hoodies that were on display that night.
Uh-huh.
You guys remember those? Or
yeah.
Those yeah. are so cool.
Were those ever actually sold? I mean, they were on display. You know, there's really cool ones. They were very prominently displayed at the far end of the party area. But were those ever actually sold anywhere?
I don't know. But we ended up getting some custom-made hoodies when we were at WonderCon.
Yes, oh, I remember wow. you guys doing that.
But it wasn't those ones that were displayed at New York. So, I'm wondering where those New York ones would be available and when.
Stay tuned.
We'll have to look into that, Greg.
That's right. We'll have to get Scooby Die Rugger to look into it.
Oh, by the way, before we go any further, I just wanted to mention earlier today I tweeted out that Steven Yeun is going to be appearing at Supernova Comic-Con in Sydney, Australia, June 16th through the 18th.
Oh, that's great to hear. We have a lot of Australian fans of Voltron, and that'll be a fun opportunity for them to meet someone who's worked on the show.
Right.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah. Supernova, it's called. Not Supernova. Supernova. Supanova. And you can go to their website, supernova.com.au, and you'll learn all about that one.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right.
So let's get into episode 5, Eye of the Storm.
All right, let's do it.
All right. It is written by Joshua Hamilton and directed by Steve Ahn. If you listened to our last podcast, you know that we ended right where this one starts up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of our previous episode review.
Greening the Cube.
Right. At the end of Greening the Cube, we saw that Zarkon's ship had appeared and that's where it ended. So now Zarkon's ship is there, and Allura starts us off by saying, "Zarkon, how did he find us?" And Keith says, "His commanders must have radioed him from Olkarion." Shiro says, "We need to wormhole now. Everyone, to your stations." Well, everyone scatters to their stations on the bridge. Shiro continues, "We've got to put some distance between us and Zarkon. This could be the fight of our lives."
Now, one thing to keep in mind real quick is that they talked about, you know, Keith is guessing that the Galra commanders must have radioed Zarkon from Olkarion. Well, that's very unlikely to have happened because that one commander that we saw in the episode was an outcast. Whatever is drawing Zarkon here is probably not that guy.
Yeah, but did they necessarily know he was an outcast?
No, they didn't. I'm just saying that we know he is. And so it must be something else.
Right. Well, there's a lot of hints at how Zarkon has been finding them and tracking them.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode alone, there's like a ton of them.
Oh, yeah.
But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think we really know yet.
Nope.
So.
No clue.
The ship is taking a beating from Zarkon's fighter ships right now. And Hunk says, "That's sure a lot of fighters." Shiro says, "Allura, can you evade these fighters? We can't have them following us through the wormhole." And Allura says, "I can try." The ship puts on its barrier and moves away from the fighters. And Shiro says, "Keith, Lance, let's lay down some covering fire." So there's a bunch of drones, each the color of their pilot. And they move into position between the ship and the fighters and start firing lasers. They're like disc drones, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They look kind of like those little robotic vacuum cleaner things. What are those
Roomba.
Called?
Roombas. They do look like Roombas. They also look like something we would have sold at Fab.
Oh, nice.
Well, the nice thing about them also is they're the same color of their pilot. So Lance is piloting the blue drone. Keith is piloting the red drone. And Shiro has a purple drone?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Pidge says, looking at her radar screen, Lance, incoming, 12 o'clock high. Lance says, got it. Lance's drone moves into position to fire, and the red drone knocks him out of the way and fires at the fighter, destroying it. And Lance says, hey! Keith says, sorry, gotta be quick. So Lance's blue drone then bumps into the red drone, and Lance says, how's that for quick? And then Keith knocks blue back and says, you! Both drones just start hitting each other. Aren't they supposed to be fighting the Galra and not each other?
Those two just can't help it.
Yeah.
This isn't the time to get into a petty fight between each other.
Mm-hmm.
Not the time for hair pulling.
No. No. So, Shiro from the bridge says, knock it off, you two. Stay in your zones. And then Lance, in a somewhat blue-masked avatar that comes up as a bubble above him, says, yeah, Keith. Did you guys see that? He was sort of like an avatar in a bubble when he spoke that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they put that in there?
I wonder if it's sort of a call out to those network-based games where a little window-in-window, will sort of picture-in-picture kind of shows up and shows someone talking. I mean, they are sort of playing a video game of sorts where they're controlling these drones, zapping bad guys. I thought it was sort of a tip of the hat to that, but maybe not.
Yeah, but they only did it that one time. There wasn't anything else. Like Keith didn't have his own avatar or anything.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, I haven't seen this kind of guy pop up at any other episode. But they do have really fun graphical elements sometimes.
Oh, yeah. This one has several.
Yeah. Yeah, and like the graphic designer in me freaks out in the best way every time that happens.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we love those things every time they show up.
So good.
And then Shiro says, keep calling out those fighters, Pidge. Shiro says, Hunk, how are the defenses holding? And Hunk starts rubbing his eyes. I don't know. 10%? 15 maybe? Everything's a blur. I've been up too long. I have tired eyes. So Shiro, who's sweating, says, I know we just came off an intense battle, but we've got to stay focused just until we jump. Now you can see the ship viewed from space, still trying to avoid all the fighters. And then Keith says, and when is that? Karan says, they're still too close. We need to gain more speed. Alora says, I've got an idea. Hold on. Pidge immediately sinks back hard against her chair and grunts as the ship moves quickly toward a planet. Pidge screams, Alora, what are you doing? And Alora says, I'm going to use this moon's gravity to gain speed and put some distance between us and Zarkon.
I'm going to be a total nitpicker here because I do that sometimes.
Does this have to do with the gravity?
Yes. Okay. Okay. I have a physics background, so, you know, please pardon me. But, you know, this is indeed a valid way to accelerate. But Voltron's not alone in doing this where, you know, it's a big deal. If we use the planet's gravity, we'll accelerate. And I'm always thinking, yeah, all spaceships can do that, like the Galra ships. but you know, I'll shut up now.
No, it's funny because my dad is a Trekkie, and my sister and I as well because of it.
Uh-huh.
And he is a doctor and like studied chemistry in college, a very smart guy. Uh-huh. And every time he's like, this is not scientifically possible because of this and this and this and this. And I'm like, Dad, I just want to enjoy the show, please.
Yeah.
You mean like in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, when they went around the sun in order to be able to go back in time?
Something.
Yes,
like
because
that,
yes. We all know that flying around a star will cause you to go back in time. Yes, or forward.
Okay.
It's science fiction. Let it happen.
That's right.
All right. So she's going to use the moon's gravity to gain speed and put some distance between us and Zarkon. So she flies close to the moon, and they're traveling at an insane speed as they make grunting noises and hold on for life. And as they're in the middle of it, Karan says, we're clear to wormhole. Alora closes her eyes and creates the wormhole, and they fly through it. The wormhole closes before the fighters can get near it. Now the view changes to Zarkon's ship, then a close-up of Zarkon, then we cut to the ship, still traveling through the wormhole with alarms blaring. Lance says, "We got away from Zarkon. How come we're still on alert?" Karan says, "Oh no, Teledav lens malfunction. We're about to exit this wormhole a lot sooner than we planned." The ship exits the wormhole, and Lance says, "Whoa, where are we? Looks like some sort of iceberg graveyard." Can you describe it, Greg?
It looked a lot like an iceberg graveyard.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yep.
When it came right down to it, that was the perfect description for it.
Yeah.
No.
Just a bunch of icebergs just clumped together.
Yeah. Worked for me.
Yeah. So Alora, who's looking worn out right now, says, "Karan, what's the status?" And Karan says, "Checking that now. We didn't make it to our exit point, but we're several galaxies from Zarkon's fleet." And Alora falls to the ground. Karan says, "Alora." And then everyone says, "Alora." Karan says, "Oh no, you look exhausted. You must rest. You've been exerting way too much energy." Karan starts to leave in a hurry. He says, "I'll go check the main turbine and figure out what's going on." Ah! He slips and lands face forward against the wall.
Poor man.
Lance says, "Whoa, are you all right?" Karan says, "I'm fine," as he moves away from the wall. There's still a wet outline of his body on the wall. And he says, "Look, I tell you what. I've probably hit a slippery spot on the ground there. Someone please wipe that up there." And Alora, sitting up slowly, says, You're sweating. You might have a case of the slipperies." Now, Karan gets very defensive here. "What? No. No, that's an old person virus, and I'm not old. I'm young. Well, youngish." Lance says, "What are the slipperies?" Alora says, "It's a common Altaian virus that occurs later in life. It's not harmful and usually only lasts a couple of days, but it causes one's body to secrete extremely slick fluid." And as she's saying this, Karan is moving a step to his right and a puddle forms below him. Then he takes another step and another puddle forms. All five paladins are cringing at the gross spectacle they're watching.
Mm-hmm. They're not the only ones.
And they all say, "Ew, gross." And Karan says, "Yes, it is gross. So it's a good thing I don't have it." Pidge runs away as if she's going to throw up. And Alora says, "Karan, it's nothing to be embarrassed about." And Karan says, "I'm not embarrassed because I don't have it. And now I'm actually going to leave because I've got to fix the main turbine." So as he tries to leave, he's actually just walking in place because he's so slippery. And as he tries to move faster, he falls down and he slides through the door and down the hallway. And as he does that, he says, "Quiznak!"
Oh, jeez.
Poor Karan.
I gotta say, I love this show. I love this show. This is the only B plot in the entire two seasons that I think comes close to the edge of silliness for me. You know what I mean? Like the edge of that threshold. I love the episode. I love the show. But this, I don't know, for whatever reason, this whole slippery thing, I mean, it works at the end and all that, but I don't know. It gets right on the edge of what I can take from a silliness perspective. I don't know. What are your thoughts about the whole thing with the slipperies?
Yeah, no, it is a little silly. At the same time, I do like, you know how I said that I like the humanity aspect of these characters? Mm-hmm. When this whole thing was happening, whenever you get a cold in Puerto Rico, I don't know if this is a regional thing only down there or if other Latin American countries call it the same thing, but we call it La Monga, which is like saying like the limpy, like being limp and mm-hmm. like gross. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, dude, I feel you. I've been drenched in mucus and sweat over La Monga so many times in my life. And I am gladly happy that it's being accepted somewhere and celebrate it because it's part of being human. We get sick and gross. Deal with it.
You know, that's a good point.
So, I mean, that was what I took from it. But I do hear you. I think the whole thing was stretched a lot throughout the episode. And I would have liked, you know, maybe a little bit less of the surprise and more other things. Like more of the moments in which we see the team, like, hanging out at the castle and, like, doing their thing. But, yeah.
Well, between the Teledev lenses and the slipperies, there was a lot of Coran in this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It was heavily Coran.
I love Coran as a character. Every time we see him, you know, his younger selves, either through that time loop thing or when he did the recording about, you know, how to get stuff from a Weblum, all that stuff. I enjoy the lighter moments, the more serious moments. He's a great character. This whole slippery thing, and frankly, Irene, that perspective you gave on having a cold, actually, and the humanizing of him through something that initially seems really out of left field, actually gives me another perspective on this. So thank you.
Well, don't forget, Joaquim and Lauren have already talked about this one, mm-hmm. and when it was pitched to them, it had to go through several levels before they finally accepted it.
Oh, wow.
But they finally did. And remember, this got accepted, and Lance parking at the handicap spot at the Space Mall did not get accepted. So just remember what you're dealing with here when it comes to them deciding what's going to go and what's going to not go.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. He slips out and slides down the hallway. All right. Now, Shiro says, all right. Since Zarkon has no idea where we are, this is the perfect time to focus on our next step. Maybe we can find that secret group, the Blade of Marmora. He looks over at Pidge sitting in her chair. Pidge, where are those coordinates? Pidge says, wait, hang on. I'm so tired, my brain's not working. And Lance says, yeah, neither is mine. Coran appears on the main screen and says, hello, all. I've checked the engines. Pidge says, that was fast. Coran says, well, I slipped right down. I mean, hurried down. He falls down and hits his head, and a very large bump appears on his head. And it's pulsing and red. Anyway, the good news is the Galra fighter did minimal damage. I flushed the turbine, and it's fine. So we now see a view inside that chamber. The bad news is the Teledev, or Wormholer, as you Earthlings call it, is in bad shape. So the view closes in on the cracked lenses. Several Skulltrite lens stones of the magnifying beam generator are cracked. As you know, the magnifying beam generator uses a crystal to convert Altaian energy into usable fuel. So what they're showing here is like an animated sequence, like a PowerPoint presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Where the first image is a small version of the beam generator chamber with an arrow going to the right, and then a crystal with a circling arrow going clockwise around it, and a small castle ship with a small Coran figure sitting in it travels through a simple wormhole portal to the other side.
I love that so much. So good.
Yeah.
So I would love to see some of the fan artists out there make a cute little plushie of Coran sitting in a cute little plushie castle of lions.
That would be perfect.
That'd be so good.
I was thinking that would have been the perfect Burger King toy.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh, yes. Very good call.
It would roll on wheels. You know, you pull it back a little bit and it would go flying forward.
Nice.
And you could have a little hole that you have it go through, you know, like a wormhole.
Ah, nice.
Yes, yes.
So he says, that supplies the power needed to wormhole. Coran then pushes his head bump back in to make his head normal again. Like that could happen.
He's Altaian. Anything could happen.
On Earth, we couldn't do that. But in cartoons, you can do that because I've seen it happen on Looney Tunes, too.
That's right. Oh, I would save so much money in health insurance if that was possible.
No kidding.
So Coran says, well, anyway, I need to remove the cracked lenses and readjust their trajectory temporarily until we can replace them. I'll also need to divert power to make up for the lost energy. Anyway, it's going to take at least a quintant. Hunk gets a little sick to his stomach. Shiro says, all right, we'll hide the ship and get some rest while Karan comes up with a workaround. Tomorrow, we'll be sharper and refocused. So they show a look at the iceberg graveyard they're in. Lance gets in an elevator with no shirt on and a towel around his neck. The doors are about to close, but Keith stops it and walks in the elevator. And Lance says, huh? What the heck do you think you're doing? Keith says tiredly, Alora said there's a pool. I'm going to go check it out. Keith says, what do you think you're doing? Lance says, same thing. So Keith, out of the corner of his mouth, here's another animation thing that we haven't seen before. Their faces come down and their chin is pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And right now their mouths are just a tiny little slit at the bottom of that point because they're so tired.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost talking out of the sides of their mouth almost. So Keith says, look, you stay on one side of the pool and I'll stay on the other and we'll be far, far away from each other. Very far away. And then the elevator shakes and stops and then the lights go out and you just see the white eyes of Keith and Lance. And Lance says, hmm? Ugh. And then we change the scene.
So what do y'all think of the whole Keith-Lance exchange here?
I mean, those two, they're just the definition of frenemies.
Yeah.
I just, I love their interactions. They amuse me so much because I've definitely been there. And we've all been there at some point. But,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's amusing. And they're so cute.
They are.
Yeah, they're adorable.
So I think it's funny how they had the same idea, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, to go to the pool. I kind of figured that everybody was just going to go to sleep.
That's a good thought.
I didn't expect all this stuff to be happening at all. I thought they'd go to sleep.
That's a good point.
I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I get tired, the last thing I want to do is sleep. I feel like I just want to do something that doesn't require my brain.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yep.
So my brain is resting, but I'm still moving. So maybe that's what these guys wanted to do.
Yeah, good point. I'm just amazed that the Altaian pool is seemingly full of water. I mean, given that Karan said that rain on Altea consists of rocks falling from the sky, I'm kind of surprised
the
swimming.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised the pool isn't full of rocks, but oh well.
It's actually water.
Yeah.
All right, well, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
Oops, spoilers.
All right, so we switch over to Hunk now, and he's pulling a sheet of cookies out of an oven, and he's in the kitchen with Pidge. Pidge says, I thought you were exhausted. Why are you making cookies? And Hunk says, because baking clears my head, Pidge. Okay? I thought you were going to help Karan with the wormholer. Pidge grabs one of the ingredients and looks at it. And then she says, one mention of the slipperies and he got all sensitive and kicked me out. So the container Pidge is looking at has Altaian writing on it. And Pidge says, I hate not being able to read Altaian. What is this stuff? Are you sure you're making food? So Hunk says, you're going to try and tell me these aren't cookies? He looks at them. They look like clear blue lenses. He bites one, and it breaks his teeth. At least that's what the x-ray graphic of a side view of his jaw and teeth implies.
Yeah, kind of like Karan breaking his spine when he tried to lift a Galra crystal back on the Balmera.
Right.
Yeah. Well, honestly, this scene, every time I watched the episode, I had to close my eyes.
Do you?
Because I could feel it. I'm like, I can feel my teeth cracking.
Ew.
And it hurts.
I definitely cringed. I cringed when I saw that.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I can't look at this.
So, you know, we all have, at least some people have recurring nightmares. I used to have a recurring nightmare where my teeth were just crumbling away in my mouth. And it was so, ugh. And yeah, that moment, I kind of relived that watching this episode tonight, too. Ugh.
Yeah, I've dreamt that, too. I think that's why I could. I was like, no, next.
Yeah.
So as soon as he breaks his teeth, he like moves across the room, pounds against the wall, keeps moving around until he's not in as much pain anymore. And then he says, okay, I might have overcooked them. And then Pitch gets up to leave, and he says, wait, where are you going? You don't want to wait for the next batch? So then the scene changes back to Lance and Keith, who are trying to walk up the elevator shaft with their backs turned to each other and their feet against the wall. They get out of sync for a second and almost lose their balance. And then Keith says, it's right, then left. You're off. Lance says, you're off. And he pushes back into Keith and shoving too hard. Keith shoves back. And Keith says, you're not shoving hard enough. And then Lance, feeling sorry for himself, says, I should be at the pool right now. Keith says, would you stop whining? And then Keith sees a hatch above them and he says, huh? Look. And he points to the hatch. So they pop open the hatch and slide down the passageway and drop with a thud on the ground. They look up and they see the pool is on the ceiling.
Nice.
I was so confused when this happened. I think it was so fast that I didn't realize what I was looking at. Like, I had to go back and see what's happening. Is it really the pool that's up there, or like, what is that? I don't know. I think I was more confused than them.
Yeah, I was too at first.
And their reaction is, huh? And then Lance says, what the heck? And Keith says, stupid Altaian pools.
Now, this is a brief aside, but if you like goofy scenes that take place in elevator shafts of spaceships, I have to recommend a rather obscure science fiction film from the early 1970s. It's directed by John Carpenter. It's called Dark Star, written by Dan O'Bannon, who would later write Alien, directed by Ridley Scott, of course. It is a hilarious, absolutely hilarious movie. So if you like elevators and crazy antics on spaceships, check that movie out. That's all.
Cool.
Wow, for once you didn't mention Star Trek.
I know.
Maybe I someday did. I'll
mention. Yeah, you did. Yeah, we've reached our quota. You know, I maybe I'll mention Fritz Lang's Metropolis someday. Who knows?
Wow, you're going way back.
Way back. Anyway.
Just a little bit.
Okay, so the scene changes again. This time it's back to Pidge, who's sitting on the floor in another room looking at a holographic monitor. A computer voice says, welcome to introductory Altaian. Pidge says, awesome. I'm finally going to learn the Altaian language. Then the computer says, level, beginner. Safety, off. Pidge says, safety? That's weird. So a 3D image of a large bear-like creature forms, and the computer says, Clan Mural. And Pidge says, Clan Mural. As soon as she says it, an alarm with red lights goes off. And Pidge goes, what's that? The computer says, Clan Mural. 3D bear starts growling. And Pidge says, Clan Mural? The beast gets up on its hind legs and growls loud in Pidge's face. So Pidge is screaming in desperation, Clan Mural! Clan Mural! The alarm goes off, and the 3D bear goes back to its original form. Then a new animal appears, looks like a scary-looking pterodactyl robeast. What do you think it looked like?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I just remember it was bigger and badder than what we just saw.
Yeah, it looks like an angry Pokemon.
Okay.
This whole scene, it makes me wonder what Altaian education is like.
Oh gosh.
And how terrified I would be to be an Altaian child. Between this and when the team is training, what was it? I believe it was the second episode when they're training with the drone, how intense that was, and it was only the first level. I don't want to know what it's like to be a kid in Altaia. I really don't.
Apparently they teach using fear.
Yeah. Seriously.
Maybe this is why Hagar is so mean.
Maybe.
She's like, screw this society. I'm going to do my own thing.
Maybe she's just a rebel. That's what she is.
Mm-hmm. I would like to know what it would be like if the safety was on.
Yeah, I think that I would prefer that for sure.
Okay. So Pidge says, huh? And the computer says, zickingly squeal.
Yeah, that was really good there, Mark.
Yeah, that was good.
And Pidge says, oh, Quiznak.
Yeah, I did think you had a bit of a Southern Altaian accent when you said that, but other than that, it sounded great.
All right, so back on the bridge now, Allura comes in to join Shiro, and Shiro says, "What are you doing here? You should be resting." Allura says, "I cannot sleep. Zarkon is out there. He's searching for us." Shiro says, "I know how you feel, but you have to step away for a while. It's what's best for everyone." And then it really hits the fan.
Oh, no.
Dun, dun, dun.
All of a sudden, a loud crash is felt. Alarms start blaring. Galra fighters are firing on them, and we see Zarkon's command ship. Allura says, "We are several galaxies away. How could they find us so soon?" So back in the kitchen, Hunk is feeling the effects of the Galra attack and drops some cookies as he pulls them out of the oven. And Hunk says, "Oh no, my good batch!" And he falls down and drops everything as a strong thud against the ship is felt. In the pool area, the pool water sucks up Keith and Lance, then drops them on the floor again as the ship takes another blast. Did you think more was going to happen in this scene?
I don't know. Again, with the confusion, I don't know what's going on with this pool.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys ever see the movie Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence? Yeah.
It's on my want list, my to-do list. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah.
In that one, she goes for a swim in the pool, but then the ship loses its gravity. And the water starts floating, and she starts getting, you know, to the point where she can't get out of the water. She's stuck inside the water.
I would love to see a science fiction film. I mean, with CGI, it would still be crazy expensive, but I would love to see one where, you know, you're on a spaceship, and the plot is just the gravity goes out. I mean, just the craziness of what would happen in an environment where everyone's used to Earth-style gravity, and it's just gone. I mean, that alone would be one heck of a movie for reasons like you just mentioned with the pool. I mean, that's terrifying. I've not seen that scene, but yeah.
Yeah, and we've already seen it happen with Pidge and Hunk.
Mm-hmm.
That scene ends right there, and then we go to Pidge in the training room again where her 3D animal is about to attack her and the program shuts down. And she goes, "Huh?" And then we go back to the bridge. So there's a lot of scene shifting here. Mm-hmm. Because what we're seeing is the effect of the Galra attack on everybody who was at their separate locations.
Right.
Now we go back to the bridge. And Allura says, "Particle barrier up. Karan, are you there?" On the video screen, still slipping, is Karan. And he says, "I'm here. Over here. Whoa, whoa, whoa." So Allura says, "Zarkon is back. What's our status?" Karan says, "Wormholing will be a problem. The lenses haven't been readjusted. I don't know if the teledav will generate enough power." Allura says, "Do everything you can." Now, Keith and Lance are now back on the bridge, getting to their stations. They're still wearing only their bathing suits and towels. So Lance says, "They found us again? How is that possible? Is that possible? That doesn't seem possible." Is it possible to say possible that many times in a sentence?
It's possible.
Possibly possible.
Touché.
The possibilities of saying possible this many times is very possible, right?
That's impossible.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to that word again later.
All right.
Okay. So Pidge gets back to her station on the bridge as well. And Allura says, "Right now, we must figure out a way to get out of here." And Keith, being very determined right now, says, "Or we can stay and fight. Now's our chance. Form Voltron. Enough running." And Allura says, "It's too dangerous." And Shiro agrees. Allura's right. "We can't take on Zarkon and his entire fleet. Remember what happened at Zarkon's command center? We wouldn't have escaped if the Blade of Marmora hadn't shut down the shield." Then Karan says, "The turbine's up, still working on the worm," and then he slips and lands on his butt, then flips over and lands on his head, face down on the floor now. Karan says, "Guys, I think I'm realizing now that I do, in fact, have a case of the slipperies." So this is an important step for Karan, okay? admitting that you have an old people virus, even though you're not old.
Now, I think as I geeked out in an earlier episode, Quran is at least 600 years old, right? Because he was apparently around when his grandfather worked on the castle some 600 years before he and Allura went on ice, so to speak. So he is up there. Now, how that fits into an Altaian lifespan, who knows? But yeah, he's got some years on him.
Yeah, just a couple.
You can add 10,000 to that for the amount of time he was in cryogenic state, right?
That's right.
Yeah, he and Allura have both aged very well during those last 10 millennia.
Yeah. So he's looking at a screen that has like all six Brady kids on it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all the rest of them are there, you know, in a split screen on his screen.
Yeah, so to let younger listeners know, that was a reference to a show called The Brady Bunch. Look it up.
Karan says, "I'm sorry I yelled at you, Pidge. I may need your help after all." And Pidge says, "I'm coming down." So Shiro now says, "Let's clear a path." And the whole castle ship moves out of the iceberg asteroids. And then Galra fighters are chasing them. And Keith and Lance are back to using the drones to fire on the fighters. So Keith says, "Lance, there's a fighter advancing on your 9. Lance says, "Thanks for the heads up. And you've got one going for the lower barrier." Lance gets his. And then Keith says, "Good eye." Keith gets his.
Yeah, so what was in the water? Because now they're getting along.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what made the difference. Was it the fact that they had worked to get up that elevator shaft and then finally got through and got to the pool?
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know.
Water.
There's something in the water. Pidge makes it down to where Karan is, and Pidge says, "What can I do?" So Karan's barking out orders, and Pidge is moving very quickly. Karan says, "Help me divert power. Slide me to that monitor. Wipe my sweat." And then on the bridge, Lance says, "Okay, buddy, you're mine." And then all of a sudden, Lance's holographic controls disappear. Lance says, "What's going on? I lost control of my defense drone." Keith says, "I got you covered." Same thing happens to Keith. "I don't got you. Oh, there must be a system failure." And then Pidge comes up on the video. "Nope, that was us. We're diverting power from non-essential systems to get the wormhole generator working." Karan's still sliding everywhere behind her. So we see Allura in the foreground on the left and Lance is in the background on the right. This shows Allura's worried reaction. Lance says, "Shooting bad guys is pretty essential." And Hunk says, "We lost secondary controls. Thermal regulators offline. Oh no, there goes the particle barrier." Then Karan says, "Okay, try it. We should be able to make one very small jump, I hope."
For my Star Trek reference of the episode, this goes back all the way to the original Star Trek where, we're losing power. Let's take power from the shields and the warp drive and put it into the phasers or something like that. I mean, this is classic, awesome sci-fi space combat fun.
Okay. So Pidge says, "Is it going to hold?" And Karan says, "I guess we're about to find out." Allura closes her eyes and forms the wormhole. So Shiro says, "The wormhole's open." The ship goes through. Several of the lenses are cracking and some are breaking. Karan says, "Oh no, the lenses are breaking down even more. We'll be out of the wormhole even sooner this time." So the ship comes through into an area where it looks like there's a space storm going on. Now everybody's tired. And Shiro says, "Zarkon keeps finding us. It's like he knows how to track us down. Maybe he planted some kind of tracking device." And Allura says, she's checking the ship's scans, and she says, "Well, there's nothing on the ship. The castle would have detected any tracking devices." So Shiro says, "Until we figure out exactly how he's doing it, we should assume that he could show up at any minute. So stay alert." And at that, Hunk is snoring. There's a bubble in his nose that pops and wakes him up. And Hunk says, "Oh man, oh, what's going on? What are you guys doing? What are you looking at?" And then Keith says, "You woke yourself up snoring." And Hunk holds his head down and says, my bad.
Now this isn't the first time that he has fallen asleep and had like a bubble of snot or something coming out of his nose. This is kind of a trait.
Was it when they went through a wormhole the last time?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember. But there was I remember there was some big moment and he had dozed off and had a nice little bubble coming in, going in and out of his nose. But I don't remember the episode offhand. I'm sure one of our listeners does. Tweet us if you know.
Well, at least he's consistent.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Then Shiro says, Karan, what's our status? Any good news? Karan says, actually, there is a bit of good news. I'm finally getting used to these slipperies. My mucus glands are working at an incredible rate. My mucus glands?
It's so gross.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So we see this stuff, you know, being left behind everywhere he goes, through his clothing. Where in the heck are these mucus glands? Do we really want to know?
Yeah, and the other thing is, now it looks like he's ice skating almost because he's getting so used to it.
I was going to say, he's better than me after training for 15 years. What the hell? I want that form.
So I guess you can thank the animators for that.
No, seriously.
There we go.
There are so many graceful elements in this episode. Especially between this and when they're inside the Teludav with the lenses all poised in different positions. I'm like, this makes me so happy.
Shiro says, any good news about the Teludav? And Karan says, I'm afraid not. The last jump overloaded the lens stones. Now even more of them are broken. I'm going to try some readjustments to change the beam trajectory. Until then, wormholing away will be impossible. There's that impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this was impossible. That's different.
Right. Pidge says, hey, there's a giant metallic storm ahead of us. I think we can hide in the eye of the storm. It should give off enough interference so we can't be tracked. Shiro says, it's worth a shot. So the ship heads into the storm. And as they get inside it, Allura realizes that they can't be tracked. So she says, brilliant, Pidge. We're essentially invisible to any radar, radio waves, universal scans, or any other known technology.
Yeah, it's just like Star Trek II. Yeah. In the nebula at Star Trek II, where the Enterprise and the Reliant couldn't find each other. Well, I guess this isn't Star Trek II because the Gar find them.
Well, the alarms immediately start blaring, and they see Zarkon's command ship at the other side of the storm. And Allura says, no. So now we're on Zarkon's ship. The druids and Hagar are still pumping purple electricity into Zarkon. Zarkon says, send in the fighters. Flush them out. When they are within range, I will take control of the Black Lion. So Pidge on video says, okay, I don't know how he found us, but it definitely wasn't with normal instruments. So Allura looks down. It's me. And everybody looks at her. It's been me all along. That's how they found us on planet Eris. The ship starts getting pummeled by Galra fighter blasts. Shiro says, it doesn't matter, Princess. We're in this together. We're going to get out together. And then Hunk says, how? We're trapped. Shiro says, we need to form Voltron and go through the storm. Lance stands up, says, the storm? What are you, nuts? Hunk stands up and says, yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, why would we do that? Shiro says, it's risky, I know, but it's our only chance.
You know, have you guys actually been inside the eye of a storm before?
No. Have you?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Wow.
It's so interesting because when I'm watching the episode, I always think of going through that as a kid. Because in Puerto Rico, we have a lot of hurricanes. So it's definitely very common. If the eye goes through and it, you know, on top of you, then you definitely experience the calm before the between the craziness.
Wow.
So, you know, it was a nice flashback. Well, I guess that's not nice. That's a little terrifying. But, yeah, it's a pretty cool experience to be in the calm.
How long would that last?
I'm not really entirely sure, to be honest, like what the timing would be scientifically. But I do recall being in the eye around an hour. It's pretty big, and like you can't really like see, you know, it's never like a circle and then you see craziness around you with flying cows. I wish it was like that. But I've definitely been able to like walk outside and like feel the eeriness of the air. And then have my mother scream at me like a crazy person to come back inside. it's very interesting.
Wow.
That's one heck of an experience. I don't know what else to say. I just a fascinating thing to go through.
Greg, this is so cool that we have somebody on the podcast with us who is experiencing most of the things that our characters are experiencing here.
Wow. This is awesome.
Yes.
And we thought it was sci-fi.
Oh, my sci-fi dreams are coming true. Or they came true and I didn't even know.
So Shiro says, we have to go through the storm, then lure Zarkon's ship away, giving Allura some time to get into open space. And then Allura says, then what? Shiro says, then we wormhole away. And he says to Karan, Karan, remember how you said getting this castle to wormhole is impossible? Well, I need you to do the impossible. So he says, form Voltron, and the lions fly away from the castle ship, and we go through the Voltron formation sequence.
Woohoo!
So good.
Where's the song, Greg?
You want me to hum it?
Well, you did it last time.
Oh, that's true.
That's right.
Let me think. Oh, wait, that's Masters of the Universe. Whoops! We all know the Voltron theme. Now, on the subject of this formation thing, I mean, you know, the original series had its stock sequence. The Third Dimension did Voltron Force. This show, is it just me, or no matter how many times that we see this, it's awesome? I mean, it's not something you get sick of, right?
Right.
I don't get sick of it. And I have to say, I have fast-forwarded other sequences. I want to continue watching the action, but this one I never do. It's so good.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of it, I mean, the whole thing is cool, but something about the red and green lion's legs folding inside and then them flying around kind of like rocket ships, almost like space worms or something, before they connect to the black lion. There's something about that bit. And the whole thing is cool, but there's something about that shot that it just gets me every time. Like, that is so cool.
It's cool and it's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's satisfying in every way.
Yep.
Especially when it happens out in space like it did here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Shiro says, team, let's draw those fighters out. And Voltron flies in front of the fighters to get them to follow. Keith says, I think it's working. They're following us. Now, on the bridge of the castle ship, Allura says, how's it coming, Karan? Karan says, in order for this to work, each remaining lensstone will need to take the equivalent of 5 beams. There's no way it can hold that kind of power. The whole thing will explode. Now we're on Zarkon's ship, and we see Hagar and Zarkon. Hagar says, we've lost them in the storm. Zarkon says, they won't be in there long. And then Keith, seeing the Galra fighters exploding in the storm, says, they can't follow us in this storm. It's tearing them apart. And then Hunk says, the debris. It's going to tear us apart if we don't do something. So Shiro from his cockpit says, Pidge, we're going to need that shield. And then Pidge says on Shiro's comm, on it. And then Shiro says, and Keith, the sword. Keith says, yes, sir. Then Shiro says, legs, I need everything you got. Was that the first time he ever called them legs?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
So instead of saying Lance and Hunk, he just said legs.
Well, Hunk did say way back when, I'm a leg!
That's right.
And there's nothing for Lance to trip on this time.
So Hunk says, Roger, engaging lower thrusters. And Lance, now the split screen comes on the top and the bottom. Lance says, I'm right there with you. So Voltron flies out of the storm into open space in front of Zarkon's ship. Now, inside Zarkon's ship, he's no longer getting zapped. Zarkon says, get me closer to the Black Lion. And Hagar says, "Sire, we have the princess trapped. We can finish her now." And that's what you were talking about, right, Irene?
Yes, that's it.
So she wants to destroy the princess right now.
Yeah, and so it really does make you wonder, does she have something against Allura personally?
Yeah, and I've never seen her be so aggressive and determined about something in any other episode. I feel like when they capture her in the first season, she does, you know, has her moment with her that she's aggressive and whatnot. But I feel like this is my one moment that I'm like, what's going on? I want to know.
Yeah, the only time Hagar seemed really fired up previously is when she was ticked off at Shiro at the end of the first season, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, you could have been our greatest weapon. This is how you repay me, blah, blah, blah. But here, you know, there's not, we don't know of a backstory yet between Hagar and Allura. So for her to stand up to a point against Zarkon and say, you know, we could kill the princess now, that's really kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Zarkon isn't having any of it.
Nope.
He says, "The Black Lion is all that matters."
And he yells, too.
Yeah.
And how even-keeled he is most of the time. This really set him off.
And then Hagar lowers her head to concede. So, back on the castle ship, Allura says, "Kerran, here we go." The castle ship gets out of the storm and flies in the opposite direction of Zarkon's ship. Hunk says, "It worked, they escaped." Then all of a sudden, a strong pull drags Voltron towards Zarkon's ship. Keith says, "What's going on?" Hunk says, "My lion!" Shiro says, "Zarkon." We see Zarkon getting zapped again. And Shiro says, "Zarkon's taking control of the Black Lion again. Fall back." So now, this is one of the strangest things I've seen, because I didn't understand how this was happening, but lights from all the eyes of all the lions and the chest of Voltron light up as Voltron struggles against Zarkon's pull.
Yeah, they're like floodlights or something, you know? They're coming out of the blue, yellow, red, and green lion's eyes and out of Voltron's robot face eyes, and then that V on its chest. So what the heck is going on there?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. I mean, is that something they did or something the lions themselves did?
I have no clue. And when this was happening, I was wondering if that had happened in the first season when Zarkon did the same thing. But clearly, I'm as surprised as you guys by it. I'm also wondering, every time that Zarkon takes control, everything goes purple. And in the same way, I know that we've talked about, you guys talk about purple representing evil and whatnot.
Yeah.
When Shiro pilots the lion, it always turns purple. And even the light streak that it creates when it flies, it's purple. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if maybe at some point in the future, now that Shiro has, well, whatever he might be, now that he has the Bayard, and maybe possibly he'll eliminate that evil from him, if that will turn white.
Well, he's still got a Galra arm, though.
That's true. But I don't know. I've always wondered, maybe because I have it imprinted in my mind from the original series that it's always been white. If there's a purpose for it to be purple, or if it's just a design decision.
Yeah, good question.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's the quintessence or I don't know.
Yeah, at first I wondered, is this a precursor to the last episode of the season where Voltron's quintessence is getting pulled out? Or are the lions somehow actively resisting the pull of Zarkon? Are they automatically doing something with quintessence to try to counteract the effects? Or is Zarkon pulling it out? Or what's going on? I just don't know.
And when I saw what happened next, I thought it was because of what Voltron had done.
Yes.
So what happens next is Hagar grunts real loud and Zarkon falls to his knees. But we find out it's the castle ship firing on Zarkon's ship.
But is it doing that? We still don't really know. I mean, yes, the castle is firing. It's doing some significant damage to Zarkon's ship. But is that what caused Hagar and Zarkon to sort of overload? You know, they may have been caused by different things.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. There's so much going on.
Right, right.
The laser eyes and the laser castle, like, I don't know. I can't focus.
Because Shiro hasn't strengthened his bond with Black Lion yet. That happens later in Space Maw.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But, you know, maybe it's all the lions together trying to fight against that. I don't know. Allura says, now, Paladins, now's your chance. Get out of there. And Voltron bolts away. And as they're bolting away, Shiro says, I forgot how intense Zarkon's connection to the Black Lion is. We have to keep our distance or risk losing Voltron. Let's disband and get back to the castle. So the lions split away from Voltron and move back into the castle ship. And Zarkon is pissed, okay? All right, he is loudly growling now. Attack that castle with everything we've got. Capture Voltron.
Yeah, this situation, Vrepit sucks.
All right, so Keith, who's still in Red Lion but on the castle ship, says, why haven't we wormholed yet? Karan says, because we can't. We're missing several Skulltrite lens stones. They're shattered. Gone. Don't exist. Slovendejo. That's Altaian for gone. So now we know an Altaian word for gone. Slovendejo.
All right.
That sounds like a Spanish curse that I don't want to say. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit.
So now you know a real life equivalent again here.
Yes, wow. I love it.
Wow.
I'm discovering so much about myself today.
Wow. You are so connected to Voltron. It's uncanny.
Yep. I'm a space mouse.
There's your costume.
Yes. Oh my God, that's probably what I should be. Genius. I will have a lot of friends in the subway.
So Pidge, who's still in Green Lion, says, wait, did you say Skulltrite? I've seen that somewhere before. I think Hunk was making some terrible cookies from that stuff. And Hunk growls. Karan looks at the cookies and says, unbelievable, these cookies do have trace elements of Skulltrite. And Shiro says, could they work? Karan says, they might be able to hold for one jump, but we'd still need several people actually physically holding them. And if the trajectories were calculated just so, and then all the paladins get in the chamber and they're still in their uniforms and they hold on to some of the lenses, and all the paladins are grunting to hold them in place just right.
I guess the Altaians never invented super glue.
Not.
Oh, well.
So Hunk says, it just warms my heart that people are enjoying my cookies. As he says that, he's laying down, holding his lenses in his hands together on his chest. So he's in the best position out of all of them because he doesn't have to grunt and struggle too much because he's just laying on his back.
Right.
So Karan gets the final thing in place and says, okay, there. Now, nobody move if you want to live. They're all in crazy positions. Completely crazy positions. Lance says, I think I moved. I think I moved. And then Karan says, well, then move back to where you think you were.
These guys are currently a part of the cast in Ballet Nacional de Cuba, where they are extremely aggressive about keeping your position the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I feel it for these guys. They're getting yelled by the artistic director right now. And it must be terrifying.
And the continuity director, too.
Oh, seriously.
Continuity directors have to put everything back in its proper place for the next take.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now I'm going to monitor the beam from out there. And Hunk says, wait, Karan, how dangerous is this? Now, Karan, in a normal tone of voice, says, honestly, this is the most dangerous thing I've ever seen or heard of. But since we're probably going to die anyway. And then he gets very intense, loud, and maniacal. What the heck? Let's give it a shot! And then he goes back to his normal tone again. Good luck, Gentlemen and gentlelady, it's been a pleasure. And the door closes, but just before the door closes completely, he says, don't touch the lasers. Hunk says, huh? So the castle ship is still being chased by Galra fighters, and Karan says, they're in position. Alora concentrates and things start lighting up.
It's a good thing that the castle's more stable than the Enterprise from Star Trek, you know, where every time the ship gets hit, everyone's bouncing all over the place. It's nice that they're able to hold still.
Oh, for sure. It's definitely not Geordi battling with the core.
Right.
None of that.
So things start lighting up and Lan says, we're going to die. We're going to die. We're going to die. And then Pidge says, hold tight, Lance. The lights bounce against all the lenses and then stop. And Lance says, hmm? And then Karan screams, it's not working! And then Alora says, Karan, what's happening? Zarkon's right on top of us. Karan says, the stones aren't reflecting properly. I need something to shine them up. And as he's doing that, he wipes his face and looks at his hand. And he says, I've got it. Hit the wormhole in 10 ticks. So Alora starts counting down. 10. And then Shiro says, what's happening? Alora says, 9. Karan says, no one move. I've got to shine these stones. Good thing I've got a case of the slipperies.
Jeez.
Then Alora says, 6, 5, 4. Zarkon's ship begins to fire its main gun. 3, 2. Karan says, huh? And then Alora says, 1. Karan dives and shines the last lens with his face, then hides. The wormhole is successful. The ship goes through it, and it closes just before Zarkon's blast hits into empty space.
It's another Star Trek moment. You know, Star Trek V, the Klingons fire a torpedo at the Enterprise, and right at the last second they go into warp drive, and the torpedo just passes by.
Couldn't you say this also happened in James Bond, where there was a laser going right at him, and he gets out of the way at the last second, and then the laser blows something up?
I feel like this is an action moment at a million action movies.
Yeah.
It's like the culminating point. But I have to say, I was extremely grossed out by Karan rubbing his face against the glass.
Yes.
That was another very visual moment that I did not need.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, as someone who wears eyeglasses, I never thought to clean them that way.
Well, I agree. I usually always have glasses on, and I've never even wondered what it's like to use bodily fluids to clean them, so I don't want to know.
Yeah.
So Alora had actually come down to the chamber, and she says, great work, team, we made it. And then she says, huh? As she's looking, all the paladins are still in their strange positions, but they're really traumatized and grunting still. And then Lance falls to the floor.
They almost look like they've been electrocuted, don't they?
Yeah.
Or burned or just fried.
Yeah, fried.
Exactly.
Fried chickens.
So we finished the episode on Zarkon's ship. Hagar says, we were close, sire, but it appears they were able to make a full jump. Zarkon says, there is no place in this universe beyond my vision's reach. Time is on my side. Set a course for Voltron. And that's it.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
So dramatic.
Yeah, and of course, the additional voices were Neil Kaplan, who plays Zarkon, and Cree Summer, who plays Hagar.
And so who was the voice of the Teach Yourself Altaian program? Was that one of the regulars, or...
I don't know. The computer voice, right?
Yeah, the computer voice was female. As I heard it tonight, I'm thinking, well, who is that? Is that Kimberly Brooks? Is it Bex Taylor Klaus? Is it Cree Summer? Is it someone else? Because I didn't watch the end credits to see who the additional voices were.
There wasn't an additional voice other than Neil Kaplan or Cree Summer. That was it.
It was my first grade English teacher.
Well, there
That's
you
what
go.
It was.
Well, I thought you were going to say it was your first grade Altaian teacher.
Nice.
Oh, I wish. Actually, no,
Irene's
going
to tell us she's actually been to Altea, and it's...
I'm secretly an Altean, and I am 20,000 years old.
Wow.
Just so you know.
Wow.
That's the deal.
That's amazing.
So, did you enjoy reviewing the episode?
Oh, this was so much fun. I still can't believe that I got to do this. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, you're always welcome to come back, too. You know, every now and then we'd like to bring fellow fans on to help us out and just share in the Voltron fan experience a little bit more. And I was thinking, you know, Mark said, hey, who do you think you'd like to have on? I'm thinking, Irene!
Oh, that's so sweet of you. No, yeah. I don't get to chat about the show, like verbally discuss it with a lot of people. So it's quite the treat. If there's a way to do it, this is the way to do it.
Yeah. On my desk at work, I've got the basic figure of the Black Lion. I've got the Burger King Voltron and the Mizax Robeast. And one of my coworkers walked up to my desk and he goes, so are you going to be bringing in any more of those gargoyles?
Oh, Lord.
I said, gargoyles? He goes, what are those, Transformers? I'm like, no, they're better. They're Voltron. So, yeah, the podcast is a great outlet to talk about Voltron, isn't it?
For sure.
So what was your favorite part of the episode, Irene?
That's a good question. I think my favorite part was Pidge learning Altaian with the aggressive Pokemons.
Safety off.
The whole thing, it was very amusing to me. I also obviously liked the storm sequence because that's one of, you know, that just kept me on my toes. And, you know, because it reminded me of being in an eye beforehand.
Mm.
But, you know, it's funny that you guys reached out to me to discuss this episode because it's not the one that I remember the most. In fact, I, like, barely remembered stuff from it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to have a reason to, like, rewatch it and enjoy it more thoroughly. So thank you for that.
I think one of the major keys to this episode and the reason why it might not get as much, you know, attention as, say, like Space Maul or the Blade of Marmora in season 2 has to do with the fact that, you know, the Galra are able to find, you know, the castle ship over and over and over and over again. And we don't know the reason why they're able to do that, what the connection is. And, you know, the crew of the castle ship is still trying to figure it out as they're going along and everything. And at some point, Alora says it's her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's wondering why she would say that. And it's not really clearly understood. You know, it could basically be anything or anybody or any of that stuff. But at some point, they're going to nail it down. But we have to go through a few episodes for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By having all these episodes where Zarkon is just continuously coming after them, coming after them, coming after them, it just really makes everything that happens towards the end of this season all that much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It amps you up.
So even though people don't say this is one of their favorite episodes, you had to have this episode in order for you to feel that, you know, all that stuff that you felt in the Blade of Marmora and Space Maul and the blackout one at the end.
For sure.
That's true.
I mean, these guys are brilliant. They know what they're doing. And they're definitely setting up the cake for us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I definitely agree.
I've noticed that a lot of the episode titles have multiple levels of meaning. And as I watched this episode, I kept thinking, well, what is one of the other meanings of this title? Because obviously they go into the eye of this metallic storm and all this, but usually there's something a little more symbolic rather than the literal reference. And it wasn't until just now when you were all sort of talking about this being sort of a calmness, if you will, in terms of the plot development. I mean, this episode is, it's kind of, you can almost think of this as a day in the life of being chased by the Galra. You know, it doesn't have a lot of the big plot points. And in that sense, it is kind of an eye in the storm for the season, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. It's really that quote-unquote quiet moment. I mean, we do also enjoy the guys having their, like, downtime. Like I said, when I was talking about the eye earlier, the eye, what's around the eye is the craziest, most dangerous part of the storm. Mm-hmm. So to your point, yeah, it's like this is the one quiet moment before we dive into the rest of the craziness. So. Yeah.
And it could very well be just that every time that Zarkon is attacking, that's the storm. And every time they wormhole and at least get away for just a little bit, mm-hmm. there's the eye.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
Their calm time period doesn't last very long.
No. Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
So I really want to know what was going on with Voltron in this episode. I wonder if there's going to be a payoff in season 3 or a later season to kind of clue us in on what was going on when all that blue energy was coming out of Voltron. I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And all the lights were lighting up.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that also had anything to do with the fact that the Paladins are really, like, trying to fight it. I feel like if Quintessence is also kind of part of the essence of whomever is piloting, if that has anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would love to know in season 3 or in whenever the time might come to find out what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
So we do see that Pidge starts learning Altaian.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a quick learner. So she even got the Skulltrite right at the end there.
That's a mighty random word for her to have learned and remembered. But, you know, it worked. I mean, it just like Karan's slipperies kind of were convenient in this show.
Very.
Yeah. The crazy thing, the crazy virus that seems to make it really much harder for the character ends up being the savior for the character at the end.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And not just for the character, for everybody involved.
Yep. Saved by the snot.
Saved by the mucus.
Oh, yeah, the mucus.
Ew. Insane in the membrane.
Oh, jeez. All right, that trumps any of the Star Trek references.
Definitely.
Go, Mark, go.
You win, Mark.
Yeah, if I ever get a bump on my head, I wish I could just push it in and have it go away.
Oh, my God. That'd be amazing.
This was fun.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Irene. And it's been great chatting with you again.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me again. Keep doing what you're doing, because I'm a happy listener all the time.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, keep in touch, and I'm sure we'll chat or see one another again soon.
Well, hopefully I'll see you guys at Comic-Con, right?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, perfect.
Well, cool. Thanks again.
Thank you.
So that was Eye of the Storm, Episode 5 from Season 2, and we want to thank Irene Fernandez for joining us.
Gosh, it was so much fun to have her on. I really got a kick out of chatting with her and with everyone at the Voltron Collective back at New York Comic Con 2016. It was just nice to touch base with her. And honestly, we had no idea that she had any kind of personal connections with any of the events in this episode, did we?
No, that was the surprise of all surprises, is that there were just so many elements within that episode that she had a personal connection to. And she even herself said that this wasn't like one of her favorite episodes or most memorable episode, but somehow mm-hmm. she's connected with all these things.
That is really wild. Just amazing. So yes, thank you, Irene, for being on the podcast. We had a great time with you.
Yeah, and we will get back to our episode reviews, but we have a very important episode coming up. Which one is that, Greg?
Number 100.
Yes. Since we started back in December of 2013, we will have done 100 episodes.
Yeah, that's just incredible.
That's pretty amazing, right?
It is. That's more episodes than any of the Voltron shows except the original series when you combine the Lion and Vehicle shows together. So yeah,
wow,
that's incredible.
And the length of our shows is even longer than those.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah, if you put the average length together out of just all of our episodes, it's probably at least an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. So I think, when it comes to the total time, yeah, I think we've beaten the original episodes.
Wow. So I'm hoping maybe we'll get to do some cameos with our voices. You know, we've had a lot of experience now. Maybe we could do cameos on Voltron, Legendary Defender. What do you think?
I doubt it.
I know, but it sure would be awesome.
We already used our anniversary shows to look back on our previous shows.
Right.
Okay, so at each anniversary, we always like to look back on things that we've already done.
Mm-hmm.
In this 100th episode, we're just going to celebrate, you know, having done all this, and celebrate the fans and celebrate the shows and all that kind of stuff. And we're just going to go wild. Okay? We're just going to make it a party.
Sure.
Okay? So I guarantee you there will be some giveaways. So watch out for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Here's how you can enter for the giveaways on our 100th episode. You only have until Monday, June 12th at midnight to get these into us. And all the details are in a link to our newsletter on this podcast page. But you can join us on the podcast by sending in an audio file using Vocaroo, SoundCloud, or a simple sound recorder like Audacity. Send us the MP3 file or a link to the Vocaroo or SoundCloud recording at our email address. That's letsvoltronpodcast@gmail.com. letsvoltronpodcast@gmail.com. Anyone who sends in an audio file that is included in our podcast has a chance to win cool Voltron swag, like youth t-shirts, adult t-shirts, hats, trade paperbacks, pillowcases, shot glasses, Voltron Legendary Defender toys, Funko toys, all kinds of things. So here's some ideas for what you can say on your audio recording, and it always works best if you just be yourself. Say what you feel, and let it come from the heart. All right, so here's some ideas. You could talk about your favorite topic on the podcast. You could just congratulate us for 100 episodes. You can say what your favorite interview or guest was. You could say, how does the podcast benefit you as a Voltron fan? You could say, what can we do to make the podcast better? What would you like us to cover in a future podcast? Would you want an official Let's Voltron podcast t-shirt? Or you could say whether you'll be able to join us at San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, or WonderCon, because we'll be there to cover everything Voltron. So we hope you'll want to celebrate 100 episodes with us and maybe win some cool Voltron swag.
Yes, and it is so much fun for the two of us to give these wonderful things away. But in the past, when we've been able to give things out to listeners, it's just a lot of fun. It's kind of a different way to connect with fellow fans. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we do want to let people know that we couldn't just go out and buy all these things ourselves, that these things are actually being donated through people like DreamWorks and World Events Productions. So we want to thank them for helping us out with those giveaways.
Absolutely.
So the other thing is that we definitely want to see if we can try to get somebody on with us that you guys know and love.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely going to be doing that, but we don't want to give it away yet.
Yeah, it's a surprise in some ways, even to us.
Yes, but this is one of those rare occasions where they're not going to know who it is by the title of this, because the title of this is just going to be our 100th episode. So that's going to be, you know, celebrating 100 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the title, they're not going to really know who's going to be in it.
Right.
So we actually will make this a surprise. And we want to thank all the people that have helped us, of course, over the years with this podcast. I mean, going back to Jeremy Corey and World Events Productions and people like Bob Koppler and Ted Koppler and Tiffany Alardi. And we want to go back and thank Mike French.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you, Greg.
And, of course, you, Mark, because you've been here, of course, since, you know, full time since day one. So, yeah.
Right. But we've had an amazing amount of guests over the years, and we've had over 100 interviews. You know, so there's too many people to mention, but there's people from the original series like Franklin Kofod and Mark Handler and John Teichman,
Neil Ross,
and Neil Ross, and Michael Bell,
Jack Angel.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then we went to the Third Dimension. You know, the Third Dimension, Mark Handler was the lead writer on that one.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Neil Ross worked on the Third Dimension as well. And we, of course, talked with Mike Young.
Right. And we talked with Mike Young. And we went to Voltron Force, where we had talked to Stephen E. Gordon.
Mm-hmm. And Giles Panton.
Giles Panton. It would have been nice to get some more of those people from that show, right?
Yes, I am still hoping that we can connect with one particular person who worked on that show. I'll not mention that person's name here because I don't want to, you know, cause any stirs or whatever. But there's someone that I've been wanting to have on this podcast for a very long time, and I hope we do eventually reach that person.
But there was also some of the voice actors from that show that we hadn't still gotten. And I know way back when many people had requested those people.
Yes.
And since Voltron Legendary Defender has come out, they've gotten most of the lion's share of the interviews.
Uh-huh. You know, we've used that pun a lot, haven't we?
Yeah, it'd still be nice to go back and interview other people, you know. So there's a ton of things that we could still do. But, you know, ever since Voltron Legendary Defender started, we've gotten interviews with most of the cast. We've gotten interviews mm-hmm. with some of the people that work for the show, like Christine Bion and Benjamin Kaltenecker and the writers, you know, Tim Hedrick and Mitch Iverson and, you know, Joaquin and Lauren and everybody else. I mean, it's just an amazing amount of people here that are involved in a show like this.
Yeah, Andre Romano. Yeah, the list goes on.
Yeah, on and on and on. So, yeah, we are so thankful to be involved in the whole Voltron universe, the whole Voltron franchise. Mm-hmm. And we feel very lucky to be able to do something like this that affects all the people that care about this show, you know? So all the fans and everything that have been on this show, that have made this podcast a better podcast because they've been on it. So, you know, just the fact that we've been able to talk to so many fans on this podcast as well is just an amazing thing.
Yeah, as grateful as I've been to be a part of this podcast with you, Mark, and of course to speak with the amazing folks we've had on as guests, this podcast would not be what it is without our listeners being who they are. So thanks to each and every one of you who listen to our podcast.
So we want to save some of this for our 100th episode. So
that's right. Yeah, that's true.
So we do want to let you know there will be giveaways, there will be surprises, there will be, you know, talking about all the different shows and everything, but looking forward to the future as well, you know. So mm-hmm. there's just going to be a big celebration, a big party in the name of Voltron.
Absolutely. That's going to be a fun gig about a fun robot. So let's make this a fun time, and it will be.
Yes. So we want to thank you for joining us for our review of Eye of the Storm, and we look forward to our 100th episode.
All right.
And we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron!